Welcome in to the Friday edition of Robbie and Rex Road. Joe Rex Road here with David Beauclair in for Robbie, Michelle Knezovic. I was actually really excited, guys, because it's going to be better. Way less frazzled today. The coffee maker is working today. That's a huge thing.
That hurt you yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, more
that was
than
a gut shot.
It was, but I mean, honestly, I was so I was like trying to wrap up this 7,000 word story too, and you know, like just the whole thing of this trying to be on microphone one. I'm not a microphone one expert, but also all of that together. So today I'm like, it's going to be a way better day. And now I just put in my headphones and only one side works. And it's so weird how that messes you up.
That's your biggest pet peeve, I feel.
Well, it's like right now talking. Like, in fact, I'm just going to take them off right now. So, Michelle, if you have something to say to me, just text me, okay? welcome in, though. Friday edition, Robbie and Rex Road, sponsored by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions, right here. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. And, David, we're going to talk a lot of Titans today on a variety of fronts. But wanted to start out a couple games of interest last night. One, the Preds fall to the Buffalo Sabres.
We said it was possible.
I mean, you know,
I didn't think it was probable, but it certainly seemed possible, and then there it was.
And I will say, you know, look, early in that game, you know, our guy C-Mace on the Bally Sports broadcast with Willie Donick early on. I mean, he was like, "Yeah." I mean, you know, you could tell he could see it right away. Like, yeah, they don't have the same intensity that they normally play with. They don't have the same focus, all that stuff. I mean, he was calling that out very early.
And then you get to where it's 2-1 and you have two defensemen crash into each other, wipe them out, turns into a breakaway for the Sabres and a 3-1 deficit.
Exactly. That you get the wacky plays. You know, you get the big goal from Sissons, which was your pick yesterday.
It was.
That was very good. But then, you know,
I got screwed.
I mean, it's amazing now how often that happens, you know, with the video crew. And again, it really has nothing to do with the play. But, hey, if the play was offsides from the start, the play was offsides from the start, you know. So that gets wiped off the board. Duchesne gets on the board of the power play. But, yeah, just, you know, it just seemed to me like it's just human nature. I mean, not to make an excuse for the Preds because you want to keep that momentum going. This may not be all that bad, though. I mean, it's 2 points there where maybe at the end you're like, how did you squander the 2 points? But
it's losing to the Jets. The Titans losing to the Jets.
Well, I mean, exactly. Well, that's
or
a thing.
And more likely the Texans, you know, after having played a really good stretch there, and then you turn the ball over 5 times against the Texans. It's the same thing. It's like you said, it's human nature.
Yeah, it is. Just, like, it's not like you don't like it if you're a fan of the team in question, but truly, like, any longtime fan of a team can cite all kinds of examples of the same sort of thing where you elevated against a good team, or you played up and then you played down. It's just like after a Colorado game like that Tuesday night, it's not hard to see how there would be some kind of a letdown. But, you know, they eventually, I think, you know, they got to their style of play. But sometimes, you know, you just have that. There's also the psychology of the other team, you know, when they kind of can jump on you a little bit. And look, that's a valuable win. That's a nice win for the Sabres. And actually, I don't think the Sabres are nearly as much of a bleep show as they have been. Like, they're actually, I think, going in the right direction.
They're not the worst team in the league this year. Yes.
Yeah, so you say that for them, yeah. So, you know, it's it sets up for an interesting little Saturday at Boston to see how the Preds can bounce back from that. I didn't think that, you know, I thought Saros was fine. It's two straight games. Well, it's not two straight games giving up 4 goals because there was an empty netter, but, you know, two straight games with more than you're used to seeing get behind him. But I didn't think there was a whole much.
The first goal, there was nothing he could do about. It was a rebound chance, and nobody took care of the front of the net. And this is the one thing that the Predators really need to get cleaned up before the start of the playoffs is their defensive zone coverage when they're forced to defend for 20 seconds or more. They get a little scrambled, guys get out of position. You saw that very much on the first goal where, you know, there's a guy in front of the net. Soros makes the save like he's supposed to. Puck ends up on the guy's stick, and he's got time to juke and pick his spot with Soros down and make a shot. Like, he shouldn't have had the time that he had on that one. And like I said, you know, the third one, two defensemen just skate into each other, wipe each other out. You give up a breakaway, like – you know, nothing. You like your goalie to stop breakaways, but they're certainly not going to stop all of them, and that, you know, that's what happened there.
And then you got a Skinner power play goal,
right?
Rebound. I mean, obviously, you'd like to not give up the rebound, but right. Yeah. I mean, it was just a tough night. And that was a tough penalty there too on the Preds, but as it is, 24-12-2 going to Boston, so. That's a very interesting game. Just short this turn team, around and get out to Boston today.
This team historically has not played well in Boston. And you can go back to the very first time they ever played in Boston. There were two games that inaugural season where they looked every bit like an expansion team that didn't belong on the ice with the NHL teams. One was a game in Philadelphia that they lost 8-1, and one was one in Boston that they lost 8-0. And I think it was like 4-0, 12 minutes into the game or something like that, as I recall. It was they were just so outclassed from the get go, and it seems to me, I could be wrong about that, but it seems to me that they've never really had a bunch of good games up there in Boston.
Back in the days when expansion teams looked like expansion teams, although yeah. I say that, and, you know, the Kraken are sitting here 10-22-4, so they're more like
what
should be.
Yeah,
exactly. What should be happening.
Got to pay your dues now.
I mean, there's the Golden Knights just sitting there on top of the Pacific again, so just enjoy the being spoiled, Golden Knights fans. Also last night, Vanderbilt, Tennessee women's basketball. I like Kelly Harper's team. I don't know, you know, when it gets to playing elite teams. I think there's still a lot to find out. And my concern is that this team shoots 28% from three and just doesn't have – like, you just want a little more shooting than that, than they have. They do have Ray Burrell back, and that's a huge deal for Tennessee, and she's still coming off the bench right now. Of course, she had a knee injury, missed, you know, I thought maybe that was season ending. It's a huge deal for them to get her back, but they play great defense. Tamari Key is a real problem inside. But honestly, Vanderbilt, it took a really good fourth quarter, but I like, you know, what Shea Ralph is doing with that team. They don't have size. They're young. I mean, they don't have enough players, period. But they do. They trap, and they're super aggressive, and they're quick. And 65-51 in the first chance at Tennessee. Jordan Cambridge, just what? How many steals she have? Just four, like her average for steals in a game. Ayanna Moore, the freshman, 16 points. She is going to be a good player for Vanderbilt. So, you know, it was competitive for a while. Tennessee separated itself. I like where both teams are in terms of, I think Tennessee, this could be Tennessee's best season in a while, potentially, but we're going to find out a lot more about them coming up. Kentucky, Georgia, some good games. You got a game at UConn coming up early next month.
Yeah, probably not ready to take down South Carolina right now, but well, trending in the right direction.
Yeah, in fact, when the heck is that? Did they just play them one time? It looks like, yeah, you're talking all the way at the end of the schedule, and it's on the road. And no one right now looks ready to take on South Carolina. But Tennessee is technically alone in first at 5-0 in the SEC, 16-1. This is the best start in a long time. And I love how they play defense and their length. And they are very connected defensively. So I think Kelly Harper, like when that hire was made, David, I just didn't love the idea. Like, do you have to go in the family here? Yeah, I wasn't sure Philip Fulmer put his all into that. And it's like
it was a pretty obvious hire in a lot of ways.
Yeah, to me, it's like there's just that added pressure if you're a former Pat Summitt player. I get
this is not name one of the coaches that North Carolina hired between, you know, Dean Smith and Roy Williams, Bill Guthridge. This wasn't just somebody. Like, you knew when Kelly Harper got the North Carolina State job, whenever that was, and you know, like, she was preparing herself to coach Tennessee. I don't think there was ever a doubt about that. She didn't get into coaching just to get into coaching. She was, you know, I mean, she when she was a player, like, she was all in on Tennessee Lady Vols basketball, and she was, you know, you could tell she lived and breathed it. And I remember telling people when she got her first head coaching job, I'm like, she's getting Pat's job someday. I think that was her plan all along.
Yeah, well, I agree.
It's not like she took the job just to you know, from the other side of it. She didn't take it just, well, they need somebody in the family. Do it. You know, like, she wanted that. She wanted that responsibility of you know, continuing the family tradition, so to speak.
Yeah, well, and it's still a coveted job. Even though, again, it's been a long time since they've even been to a Final Four, but. You know, Holly Warlick, you could say the same thing about, right? I mean, she was basically in line for that forever, and she's like the first Tennessee athlete to ever have a number retired, right? And, like, you just – it doesn't guarantee success.
But with Holly, it was more – you know, she was the good lieutenant, right? And yeah. she did it because I think she felt like she had to, because she was there, and she knew everything – that Pat knew and everything that Pat wanted, and was sort of, you know, saw herself as the best person to sort of keep this thing moving. I'm not sure that she ever saw herself as more than Pat's right hand.
Yeah. Well, it turned out that way. I do think that the, you know, when you have someone like Kelly Harper, who has been a head coach at three different spots, Western Carolina, NC State, Missouri State, got to the NCAA tournament with all of them, although NC State kind of went, you know, didn't go in the right direction after the early start, then that's a better grooming ground for this job. Hey, 21-10 first year, 17-8 last year, you know, disappointing loss to Michigan, but Michigan was really good in the second round, and right now 16-1.
And they had a great player who dominated, you know, it was one of those in Nas, yes. Hillman, you know,
yes.
You know, just one of those, you know, some days you got to tip your cap to that player and say, we can't, you know, I mean, that's what happens in basketball, right? Sometimes one player can make that much of a difference, and that's what happened in that game.
Yeah. So, you know, I wasn't sure with Renia Davis moving on what this team could be, but I like it. It's a good team. I think a very close team. And, again, defensively, there's no question. This is a really, really good team. So we'll see where that goes. And we're going to get a break now and get into Titans. Actually, you know what? We're going to hold off on the Titans. Let's talk about the rest of the AFC South, because it's a real,
yes.
It's a real beauty. It's a real beauty in the AFC South.
It is a beauty in the AFC South.
Coming up next on Robbie and Rex. So if you want to get involved on our phone or text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We'll be right back. ESPN 102.5 The Game.
From the initial beginning of David Culley's tenure, he was the scapegoat. The man had to sit up there and talk in interviews about what's the situation with Deshaun Watson. He had no damn idea. And they kept putting him out there on the podium to talk about it and talk about it. Y'all know I brought this up when it was initially happening. So this is what it looks like, America, when a franchise is in disarray. and they have to make a hire. They have to do a lot of other things, but they have to do like the Houston Texans got to do a lot of soul searching about who they are, what they want to be, and how they want the future to look like, and how they can begin to change the narrative of what Houston Texans fans believe about this franchise and organization. So moving forward, every step they make will be critical to everybody's reputation and everybody's decision making from this point going forward. David Culley got to live his dream, but he was a scapegoat from day one he was hired in Houston.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. Joe Rex Road, David Beauclair, Michelle Knezovic. Let you know, you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. And you just heard that, David, on David Culley. I should have known, you know, it was actually kind of obvious. You know, he was asked Monday, you know, do you have a meeting planned with, you know, Nick Caserio or anybody? And he's like, no meeting. So that actually should have been the
yeah.
Like, there should always be like a, hey, let's have a end of season meeting. If there isn't one planned, then that means they're probably just going to call you, you know, and fire you, which is what happened. So I was, you know, at NRG Stadium Sunday and talking to some people who cover them. There was a lot of this, like, yeah, he might be in trouble. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. There is no freaking way, right?
I mean, they got better. They, you know, they played much better the second half of the season. They never had a chance to begin with no Deshaun Watson.
Right. I mean, he had no chance. I think they overachieved in what they ended up doing. Now, I know that there were a couple close games where some of his decisions.
I was going to say, there were reports that, there were issues that he didn't seem prepared for as a head coach.
Well, it was the Patriots loss, which is a game they should have won, by the way. And I don't remember the exact scenario, but it was like a punt decision. I think it was like not accepting a penalty, right? Was that what it was? It was like a really bad, in-game decision that ended up being very costly. That's a game they should have won. So, fine. You know, you make a mistake in-game coaching. That's not what this was. I look at this, and I think a couple of things. One, it's incredible that in the Titans division you have two organizations this dysfunctional. And then, you know, the Jags and the Texans. I mean, the Jags right now, I mean, the Texans are looking at the Jags like, hold my beer. You think you guys are a mess? Check us out. Meanwhile, we also have the Colts here, and Chris Ballard, I don't know how much you caught of that. Like a good, I think, like he does a lot, very kind of open, honest presser about their issues, and definitely not committing to Carson Wentz, as he shouldn't right now.
So you've got two teams in the division without a coach that'll be on their third coach in as many years by the time we kick off the next season. You've got the other team doesn't have a quarterback that could well be on its fifth different starting quarterback in five seasons when we kick off the next one.
And
you've got the Titans.
You've got the Titans and say, hey, thank you.
We've gone 5-1 in the division each of the last 2 years.
They know who their
coach and quarterback are going to be. No problems there. If you can go even 4-2, but you go 5-1, 6-0 in your division, you got a pretty good chance to end up on top there. So the Titans are set up. You know, they talked about, players talked about it. You know, that they want this to be a long run atop the division, and they are set up for exactly that, courtesy of the other three teams in the division.
Yeah, I still think Trevor Lawrence could end up being really good. I mean, he's a player I think worth building around. So that hire is huge for them. But I think they've got issues that pretty obviously top down issues there. I don't know if that dooms them moving forward, but it makes it more challenging. And then this organization, I mean, to me, I read this as he never had a chance. Like, I read this as this was the plan. And I could be wrong, but I think that Nick Caserio, I think they knew that this was going to be a bad year. And I think, you know, they found someone who, and of course, you know, you got Jack Easterby, who is very much a popular punching bag down there. That whole thing is weird. And that's why – so another aspect of this, David, that I hear is, Brian Flores and Deshaun Watson wanted to play for Brian Flores. So I'm going to trust John McClain yesterday, who, again, tweeted this. He will never play another snap for this team. Right. So just stop it right now. Now, maybe they'll still hire Flores. You know, but if the idea was, come on, Deshaun, what do you think? After all your troubles over, you can still, you know, I'm going to believe John McClain on that.
Yeah, I would too. But here's the thing, and I wrote this a couple of weeks ago after the players were talking about it. I went back 30 years in the NFL and looked at teams that were able to put together a run of at least 5 division championships in a row. I mean, it's a big number.
Yes, big number.
That's a big number, but it's happened a few times, starting with the Dallas Cowboys, 92-96.
Yep. Nope, that's the glory days, Aikman Emmett.
They won 3 Super Bowls in there. You had the Indianapolis Colts, 2003-07. They got a Super Bowl in there in 2006.
The glory days of Peyton. Yep.
Of course, you've got the Patriots, 2003-07, which included 2 Super Bowls, and then 2009 through 2019, or excuse me, 2 Super Bowls in the first one, 3 Super Bowls in the next run after that.
09-19.
First place every year. Denver Broncos, 2011-15, a run that started with Tim Tebow at quarterback, finished with Peyton Manning at quarterback, and a Super Bowl win.
And Tebow, by the way, threw a winning touchdown pass in the playoffs.
Yes. Kansas City Chiefs, 2016 through now 2021, they got a Super Bowl in there. New Orleans Saints, 2017-20, which is only 4 years, actually, and they did not win a Super Bowl. So
they had one.
Should have been
one.
But yes, but in that stretch, they did not put it together. So the point being, if the Titans can settle in first place and stay there for a few years, it's a pretty good bet they're going to be winning a Super Bowl somewhere along the line. That you don't just sit on top of a division by accident, although in this case, that might be the case because everybody else is such a mess. But it's something for Titans fans to think about and a little cause for optimism there.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I would look at that and look at them, and I would still say, without knowing how everything's going to shake out, and especially like the drafts moving forward and all that, this right now would still seem to be, you know, maybe they'll win the division moving forward, but I still like this right now, this opportunity, as maybe the best chance, you know. You know, without knowing so much about the league, but you just expect. I mean, even look around the AFC. Are the Bengals going to get better protection and defense around Joe Burrow? You know, are the Chargers going to figure it out around Justin Herbert? I mean, you think about the conference at large. A lot of things could change and make it more difficult. I still think the Colts, you know, are going to be the legitimate, you know, contender and a legitimate competition for the
Titans. They're really good in a lot of other spots.
Yeah.
other than the most important one.
Well, maybe they'll get Aaron Rodgers or Russ and everything will be flipped on its
head. Wouldn't
that
be something?
Yeah. But that's, you know, right now, it's like you said. There's just a big gap, and I just, man, this Texans thing is. I feel terrible for David Culley, who seems like, by all accounts,
I thought the same thing.
Almost an extraordinarily, good guy, and someone who, in some ways, doesn't kind of carry himself like an NFL head coach, right? I mean, he's just. Is someone that you naturally root for. Obviously, he's from Tennessee. He's a Vanderbilt guy. But I just thought he did a good job. Overall, big picture, yes, you got some in-game stuff that you don't like. I just don't think it was about that. I think that they have their guy. And if they bring in Josh McDaniels, let me tell you something. They become the absolute villain franchise of this league. I mean, they're the easiest franchise to root against in the NFL.
I mean, all you have to do is look at the third quarter Sunday to know that David Culley had that locker room. You know, like that was a team that could have easily quit on this season weeks ago. And in fact, there was one game maybe the week before they played the Titans, week after they played the Titans. I remember watching them and I thought, boy, there are guys checking out. And, you know, there were guys that didn't want to hit, didn't want to really run, it looked like. And he got them back and got them, you know, got them playing pretty good football down the stretch. So, I mean, it certainly was not a total disaster. And he was hamstrung from the beginning, not having Deshaun Watson.
And, you know, the thing is, also, there's another whole side of this. Right now, there's one black coach in the NFL, which is outrageous. Now, there's eight openings, so, you know, you still want to see where things end up. But, like, you know, Mike Tomlin, who is a top-tier head coach, is the one guy, the one black head coach in the NFL, which is just, I mean, the NFL has tried, and I'm sure the NFL home office right now is, you know, looking at the owners like, oh, my gosh, what are you all doing, you know?
Exactly.
But Cully is an example of someone – look, you can't blame him for taking this opportunity. I mean, he's waited so long. You got to jump at the opportunity when you have a chance. And I just – I'll be really interested to hear what he says on this. And in all likelihood, usually people don't open up because they, you know, you could hurt yourself for the next job on this. But I wonder, you know, if he – looks at this now like I was just a 1 year patsy, and now they have they'll bring in whoever their guy is, their Patriots related guy probably.
The whole thing, correct me if I'm wrong, but weren't they behind everybody else last year too in terms of the hiring process? Like wasn't Cully hired like 2 weeks after everybody else was done hiring coaches? And it just seemed like
remember that.
January 21 doesn't give me that.
January 21?
January 29th he was hired.
That's late.
So that, you know, that's a little later than everybody else.
That's probably a little bit late. Yeah, cuz I imagine we're going to start seeing, well, any minute now some of these filled, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that would be a little bit late, but as it is, it's the Titans division, and it's just a mess in other spots. When we come back, we're going to get into the Titans specifically and talk about 91 Titans playing this year on the field. Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN, 102.5 The Game, Lyft, sitting live from the Hillside Medical Game Studios. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Rowe from the Hillside Medical Game Studio. Joe Rex Rowe, David Beauclair, Michelle Knezovic. Talking Titans. Let's talk about all the Titans, David. All the Titans. So
all the Titans.
So 91 is a record. Actually, what is the – do you know what the number is for the strike season included record? I don't know. I mean, it's going to be certainly more than 106, right?
Certainly.
Like 106 would be the low, right? Wouldn't that be the floor?
Assuming that there were teams with nobody who crossed picket lines, and I think there were a couple of those.
Yeah, I guess that's true. There were a few people who were kind of trickling over the line, yeah. But yeah.
So
but
Dallas had, you know, Dallas had a bunch of them. I mean, that was a big thing. Remember the last week when they knew the strike was ending anyway, but Dallas had a few guys, and ultimately Dallas played Washington, and Dallas had like 25 guys, including, you know, Randy White, like their whole defensive line, everything, and Joe Gibbs and the Redskins playing with almost like completely replacement players beat them.
And of course that team went on to the Super Bowl.
Yes.
And went on to win the Super Bowl. I mean, one thing I remember about that year is, like, the Lions were typically crap, but they were 3-0 with the – I was like, let's keep this going. I like this. Let's keep the replacement players, huh?
Jeff Fisher was in Philadelphia at the time and said Buddy Ryan refused to believe that the league was going to go with the replacement player things. And so, like for weeks beforehand, guys were reaching out, kind of, you know, sort of lining up guys just in case. And Buddy's telling his assistants, "Don't worry about it. That's not happening." So the Eagles ended up with just a pile of crap, and they went 0-3 in what was an otherwise pretty decent season for them, and missed the playoffs as a result.
They ended up with a bunch of Was it Vincent Papale? Is that the guy?
Oh no, Vince Papale could play. Well, he didn't come out of that deal.
No, I'm just saying, if your whole roster is Vincent Papale, then that might be a problem. But yes, no, very inspirational story, and everybody remembers that player. You should look it up on YouTube. So the Titans in the non-strike year, 91 players. So I went. I decided, you know what, for the Athletic, hey, let's go and write a little thing on every one, which was, I didn't realize at the time, was way more time-consuming than I would have thought. And your guy, John Glennon, actually emailed me and said, hey, man, like I could have given you like the 82. I did it when it was 82.
Yeah.
And he was like, he said the same thing, like, yeah, that took way more time than it should. Just, you know, trying to figure out what I thought was interesting going through this was, one, like, okay, how'd they all get in the league and how did the Titans get them? And then where are they? Because there's a bunch of guys who are in different spots. There's quite a few players on this list of 91 who have multiple avenues to a ring. You know, Bobby Hart, back with the Bills. So, you know, I mean, he gets a ring. He's got to get a ring of the Titans. I mean, all these guys have to get a ring, right? Like, there's no question.
Right? How is the playoff share going to get divided? Hmm. Like, do you give those guys a piece of the action, too, or is it just the guys who play in the playoffs?
Well, I assume it's just who's with
you
now.
It's just a check.
Right?
It's not a pool. It's not a playoff pool for the NFL, I guess, is it? I think it's if you're on the roster, you get a bonus check.
Yeah, if you're on it currently. Yeah. So there's a lot of guys.
So there's not it's not because Major League Baseball, I think you get a pool of money and you divide it up.
So so and with this, by the way, you know, so I think I count up at least 74 are still with the organization and some a lot of guys on IR. A lot of them on the practice squad. You know, a lot of these 91 are guys who had to get bumped up for a week or two for the practice squad.
Right.
But going through this, it's amazing. Like even who you forgot, I'm like, oh yeah, Avery Williamson was on this team. You know, like what?
That's graduated right. with him.
You graduated with him?
Well, okay, we were.
You're that old?
No. We're not the same age. He came back and. He sat a row in front of me at graduation, fun fact, at Kentucky.
Oh, okay. So he came back and got his degree.
Yeah.
Very nice. All That's right. Little BBN, Avery Williamson. Yeah.
Avery Williamson, a guy who led this team in tackles for a few years. Everybody's very excited about him when he came back. And, you know, you've got Zach Cunningham, David Lomer, Sean Evans, Jayon Brown now. Like he couldn't even, you know, couldn't even make a dent on this team.
And I was I'm trying to remember exactly. So he came back for two games, and he ended up he was on special teams.
Just played on special teams, never played a snap.
But
on
I
defense.
Actually thought because of the particular because you know that's the thing. So much of this 91 player story is okay. Which position group was completely just riddled with injuries on this week or that week? And that at that point, the line I think a couple guys were missing.
Yeah.
So I actually thought, oh, yeah, we'll probably see him a little bit, and we didn't. I think it was actually Monty Rice who got those snaps instead of him, if I recall correctly.
I believe that times, yeah, that's
and
probably
it was sort of
right.
like, is Monty Rice going to be ready? Yeah. Maybe the so Avery Williamson, by the way, is actually he's a free agent. He went back to the Broncos, so the Titans signed him to the active roster from the practice squad, from the Broncos practice squad. Then he ended up going back to the Broncos and being released. I mean, you know, you go through this, you got little Adrian Peterson. You got so many defensive linemen. And I know you want to have depth there anyway, but like you got three number 95s.
Is that right?
You got three number 95s on here. So who was the better 95? You got Anthony Rush, who was a 95. By the way, he got his first career start. The Falcons, it's like the Titans take a lot of Texans guys. And like now we have the Falcons and the Titans
sort of
shuttle because
right.
they trust each other. Okay, what about this guy? Okay, what about that guy? So Anthony Rush is one of the 95s. Cal Paco is the current 95. And, you know, maybe a guy who could play in the postseason. I don't know. He might be in the rotation. And then the original 95 was Eli Ankou. Remember that guy?
Sure.
Yeah. Sure. Eli Ankou, and he
played one game, I think, didn't he?
He stuffed Jonathan Taylor for no gain. He had two tackles in the he got elevated again. The D line was all riddled with injuries going into that Colts game. the Halloween Colts game. And he got a tackle for no gain on Jonathan Taylor. And by the way, he's another guy, Eli Ankiw, another guy who is now on the Bills practice squad and has two avenues for a ring. Breon Borders is on the Cardinals, and he actually had to start last week, and it didn't go well. And he had to and so he also has multiple avenues for a ring.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
I mean, it's you forget about guys like Cam Batson, who – I still say, I mean, you know, there's another guy I counted out in the preseason. Oh, he's not going to make it now, right? They got Rodgers and Marcus Johns. Nah, he would have played. He would have helped this team, and I wouldn't count him out moving forward.
This is his second catastrophic injury, though, and it's, you know, I believe it's contract year for him. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, if you're he's a guy you're going to look at, you say, Cam, we like you a lot. We appreciate it. You know, we're going to get a bigger guy who's not going to get hurt on us.
You're probably right, but I'm still going to believe it when I see it with him, because he is
tough to get rid of here. He certainly has been. There's no question.
He's probably as impressive, you know, inspirational a guy as I have. But it's a sprawling list. So when we come back on Robbie and Rex Show, we're going to get into. Of this massive list, well, of the list of players who are actually still here, who could be the unsung players who could be big in the playoffs? Next on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, Joe Rex Road, David Beauclair, Michelle Knezovic. Robbie's got the day off. Robbie, new homeowner. Shout out to the Stanleys. For buying a nice home. Very nice.
Beautiful. The yard. Robbie can't wait to hang out, have a party there.
Yeah, no, the kegger there is going to be crazy. I'll see if I can bring a nitrous tank. But seriously, the lawn mowing that is going to go on there, that's a great lawn. But, man, that's what I think of is like, wow, that's a – hope you got a riding mower, buddy. But –
picture good Robbie cardio. On a rider mower thing.
I can see it. I can see it. You know, got the beard flowing in the wind, and you know, I mean, that's just it's a big lawn, but very nice house. So, congratulations to the Stanleys.
You guys are paying him too much at this station, clearly.
I guess so. You know,
guy's got some acreage out there.
Yeah, right.
I'm telling you,
I gotta find out
you
what he's making.
You gotta renegotiate your contract. Yeah.
Oh, man. All right, so we're talking Titans and the 91 Titans, but of that, the 70, mid-70s who are in the organization, beyond that, you got the, of course, 48 who can be available on the next time they play football, which is next Saturday or Sunday. What do you think? You think it's going to be Saturday?
I think it's Saturday.
And that's just because it's the Titans?
Because it's
sort
the
of thing?
Titans, yeah.
Yeah.
It seems to be the way it goes.
Titans, Bengals. Titans Raiders. I will say, if it's Titans Patriots,
Titans Patriots has a chance to go to Sunday.
That might be a Sunday, but yeah,
yes.
Yeah. I think you're probably right.
Titans Bengals is definitely Saturday. Titans Raiders definitely Saturday.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're probably right. So
Titans Steelers, you know, Roethlisberger, they might like to get him in a more favorable window, but I doubt it.
It's nice of you to entertain that possibility.
Yes,
I'm not entertaining it, but. You're right. It's possible.
It's possible.
Unsung guys in this roster. You know, if you look at the bottom of the roster, guys, you know, someone who we don't talk about much but could actually be really important. And, you know, one thing you think of is special teams, which haven't been great for the Titans this year. I've been told by more than one coach, the punt is the most important play in football. Don't you forget about it. So the special teams guys are important too, but who comes to mind when I ask that question?
You know, Derek Roberson. There's a guy that
there's a guy that
coaches had been sort of buzzing about during the off season and through training camp. A guy who had, you know, who had sort of figured it out in terms of practice habits and preparation and that sort of thing, and they were they were really excited about him, and I say this in terms of, like, I don't think he's going to dominate a game, but he strikes me as a guy who, late in the third quarter of a close game, third and seven. He's out there, rushes the passer, gets a strip sack, you know, kind of a play that changes the game thing. I could see Roberson doing that. It seems like everybody, you know, thought that kind of season was in the cards for him, and he's had injury, he's had illness, hasn't been able to get on the field a whole lot, but he's one of those guys. Maybe it's his turn. You know, everybody else has done something big, it seems like, to help this team.
That's not a bad. That's an interesting choice. Are we sure he's going to be active?
No.
Because I mean,
no, we're not. But you know, with this team, you know, everybody's in play at all points. It seems like,
yeah. Because you got Ola Adeniyi, who I think for sure, when you compare those two guys, Ola is a core guy on special teams, right?
So yeah, he's absolutely playing. Yeah,
so he's playing.
Yeah.
You know, a guy who comes to mind for me is Dontrell Hilliard. Maybe that's too obvious, but he gets bumped down, right? Everybody gets bumped down. Presumably with Derrick Henry, or do you not buy that?
Well, no, I don't think he's been bumped down. He's sort of been moved over.
He's been
he's reassigned.
Repurposed.
He's taken Jeremy McNichol's spot.
Right.
So which he, you know, he kind of was, he was sort of half that, you know, half Foreman's backup, half sort of change of pace guy, and now he's full on change of pace, third down receiving back. Yeah, so he'll absolutely get opportunities.
I'll be honest, I was surprised as that unfolded when it was kind of obvious, you know, when they activated Wilkins and the way they moved around. I was like, oh, so they're actually going to go with Hilliard as a third down back. Just, I mean, obviously they must, because to me, trust has got to be such a big part of that, right? Pass protection, recognition of what's coming, recognition of your assignment and pass pro, being able to do it. I mean, McNichols kind of like Cam Batson for me. Another guy's like, how about some Mekhi Sargent? You know, but instead, McNichols hangs in there, and actually, McNichols had some really good moments this year with the ball too. But Hilliard certainly is better than him in that way. I don't think there's any question about that. But the trust factor there, that's where I was a little surprised by that.
Yeah, because McNichols has become one of those guys that, you know, you hear that word a lot with him, that they trust him, and he, you know, in a lot of ways he's just a guy, but he's just a guy that the Titans have not been able to live without for pretty much 2 years until now. And, you know, Dontrell Hilliard, one of Mike Vrabel's stray cats, as he called them not too long ago, you know, showed up off the street and by all accounts is a meeting room rat, was just soaking it all in the moment he walked in the doors.
I mean, honestly, and that's the thing, that's with Vrabel. Again, he's not going to lay everything out for you, but when he volunteers information on some guys, then you know you have to take it seriously.
Yeah.
One, Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, I mean, every chance anybody over there gets, right?
Exactly.
I mean, it's just like I can't recall a player more praised than Westbrook-Ikhina, just with the fact that he knows all the positions, all that stuff. Like, it keeps coming up.
He's the best blocking wide receiver now, we hear, you know. Core special teams guy, great as a gunner, you know. Yeah, they can't find enough things to say about that guy.
Friend of the show. you going to make fun of me, Michelle? Go ahead.
I know you. I just said you knew all along.
That's right.
It started with your article.
That's right. That's right.
Right? Like, look how far we've come, full circle.
Pretty wild, right? Pretty wild. Yeah, wide receiver too. I mean, he actually is wide receiver too, sort of. It's like he and Julio are combined. But
was wide receiver one when AJ was on injured reserve?
He has been. I mean, he has been wide receiver one. Yes, but Hilliard is another one of those guys. So, and very early, like you said, Vrabel's talking about that stuff. He's like, okay, pay attention to this, because like it's not like some coaches are, you know, may say a lot of the same stuff about everybody, and then it's like, okay, whatever, it doesn't mean anything. It does mean something when he does, because it doesn't happen.
He doesn't like to single out guys,
right?
Like, he'll talk football with you all day. He'll talk strategy. He'll talk, you know, defensive alignments, all those sorts of things. He's, you know, he's so much better in season than out of season because there's football to talk about, but he still doesn't like to single out guys. And Hilliard was one. Buster Screen's another one. You know, the praise that he has heaped on Buster Screen since Screen has been here has been pretty unusual as well.
Yeah, and then some other guys who come to mind. Like, what about a Larrell Murchison? And again, there's another guy. I don't know that he's if Tart, Naquan Jones, everybody's available. I don't know if he's playing or not. He still intrigues me at times as a guy who, you know, can move well, can make plays. I think that he's, you know, just a, you know, one of those guys who could potentially be sort of an under the radar guy who matters. You know, in the back end, it's, yeah, I think we know what the rotation is, but Screen, Chris Jackson, and Dane Cruikshank, the tight end silencer.
Yeah, that's right. Could,
you know, I think that's an interesting. I mean, look, that guy has not been able to stay healthy too much in his career. You know, his career, he's had a lot of injuries, but what he did against Travis Kelce on that day in particular,
right,
was impressive. And they've used him in that role. And like, if they play the Raiders, for example, like, is this the secret weapon against Darren Waller, and can he get the job done? That physicality off the line.
He's an interesting guy because and it's one of those. You know, they talked about him in that regard when they drafted him. They said, you know, well, he's probably not really a cornerback, but he's not exactly a safety. He's a guy that we'll use to match up, you know, in certain situations with some running backs and tight ends and things. And he, you know, he can do that. It reminds me back in the Super Bowl team. It's a little different, but they had veteran cornerback Steve Jackson, who was very much kind of on the last legs of his career, and they only played him in games where they really kind of had to have him, you know, because he was at a point where he couldn't have lasted through a 16 game season. But like, one of those, you know, one of the things was he was covering Marshall Faulk out of the backfield against the Rams, and in the regular season game did a good job against him. And it's funny, if you see the decisive play in Super Bowl 34, the big touchdown pass to Isaac Bruce, at the snap Faulk swings to the right, and as you watch the film, you can see Steve Jackson just flying from you know, a little, I guess, the slot, just flying over to the other side to go get Marshall Faulk on that play and eliminate him as an option, which I think he was probably maybe the first option on that play, and Warner had to hold the ball and unload it and eventually get a movie made about him.
Have you seen is that
have
out?
Not. Have you seen? Yeah, I think it's out. Right? I think it's out. Yeah. It just doesn't strike me as one of those sports movies that you need to see.
Yeah, like one of those. Okay, if it's on, watch a few minutes.
When it's on cable and it's the summer and I have nothing to do, you know, I'll probably check out a few minutes of it.
Maybe. All right. Well, we're gonna get a break. We come back, we're gonna talk about a couple things about the Titans. One thing that's really good, historically good, and then some things that people think are bad.
We need to talk, too, about something we stumbled on yesterday right near the end of the show.
What's that?
The second quarter.
Oh, the second quarter. That's a good idea.
We stumbled on that little factoid. I went and did some digging yesterday.
Oh, okay. Very good. We'll get into that, too, next. ESPN 102.5 The Game, Robbie and Rexrode.